Hey, Donna.
Yeah, Chris?
Do you remember Harry and the Hendersons? Hello, and welcome to another episode of Hey, Do You Remember? A show where we reminisce about a movie or TV show we grew up with, and then take off the rose-tinted glasses to see how it holds up today. I'm Chris.
And I'm Donna.
And today we're revisiting Harry and the Hendersons.
For ages, he has hidden in the forest, eluded hunters, baffled scientists, and remained a mystery. Until the Hendersons bumped into him.
What is it?
It's a major discovery. We have to take it home.
In this 1987 comedy, the Henderson clan are on their way back from a camping trip when they hit an animal that turns out to be Bigfoot. Believing the creature to be dead, they tie him to their station wagon and return to the Seattle suburbs where family patriarch George can't wait to announce this major scientific discovery. But it turns out Bigfoot was just unconscious, and now the Hendersons have to figure out what to do with the rampaging beast. Donna, what do you remember about Harry and the Hendersons?
Well, Chris, I remember loving the crap out of Harry and the Hendersons when I was a kid. I would rent it every chance I possibly had and watched it ad nauseum, completely and utterly obsessed with this movie. And mostly what I remember was him, Harry, shooting his head through the top of the station wagon.
Yeah.
And I remember shenanigans in the kitchen in which the daughter's corsage was tragically eaten.
Yeah.
Those are the main scenes. Like, I think those scenes are, like, etched in my dreams. Like, I watch this movie so much. But that's sort of what was left, the residue, when we thought we would look at this again. That's sort of all I really remembered about it.
Okay.
But I loved it. I sure did love it.
How long has it been since you've seen it?
I think I may have watched it once when I was about 15. Would have probably been the last time I saw it.
Yeah, it had been a long time for me too. This was, my mom taped this off of HBO for me and my sister.
Oh, nice.
And so this was one of those VHS tapes that we nearly wore out. I mean, it's crazy how now we're just obsessed with new content. New, gimme, gimme, gimme. And we have thousands of movies and TV shows we can just stream whenever we want. But as a kid, it seems like I just rewatched the same movies over and over and over again.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, so just whatever was in our VHS cabinet, that was my Netflix queue.
Absolutely.
It took a lot less time to pick something. It was just, oh, Superman 2, Harry and the Hendersons, just over and over and over.
Yeah.
So there was a point in time where I probably could have recited every line of this movie. My cat's going bananas on the furniture behind me. It sounds like popcorn popping. He's just being an asshole.
Sounds good, yeah, popcorn.
But yeah, so I think it's probably been at least 15 years since I've seen this. Probably even more than that. So going into this, I remembered the broad strokes. I remembered John Lithgow as the father. I remembered Harry, of course, like the design of that suit and all that. I remembered there being a sexy, slightly erotic hot tub scene, and I was so embarrassed when it got to that part and I saw what actually happened.
I can't wait to get into that. That's amazing.
But yeah, there's not a whole lot else. I sort of remembered Don Ameche is the guy who runs the Bigfoot Museum. But I had totally forgotten about that main antagonist, the French hunter. I couldn't really remember the specifics of him or really the entire plot. So I was cautiously optimistic about this because on the one hand, it was nice to revisit something that I didn't know beat for beat, where I wouldn't just be checking boxes as it played out. But as we've discovered, there are certain movies from this era that you're better off just leaving, like, in the rearview mirror. And this was a film that I loved so much as a kid and is so deeply tied into all these great memories of like watching it with my mom and my sister, and I just really didn't want this one to suck. And with that said, Donna and I just looked at it with fresh eyes, so let's see how Harry and the Hendersons holds up. It starts off with these point of view shots of someone walking through the forest, like Jaws. I mean, Jaws wasn't in the forest. Holy shit, that shark was scary enough. If it could walk on land too, like fucking forget it. Game over. Humans are done. We had a good run, but that's the ball game. But
just like
Jaws starts with like the same sort of thing, only underwater. And I bring it up because Spielberg directed Jaws and his company Amblin produced this. But so like when this started, these point of view shots of the forest, I'm like, what the hell is this? I don't remember any of this. Mm-hmm. And you know why? Is because I realized later that since my mom taped this off of cable, the first 30 seconds or so were cut off.
So for me,
Harry and the Hendersons starts with the reveal that it's not Bigfoot, that it's George Henderson holding up the dead rabbit that his son Ernie just shot.
Yes, yes, yes.
So as soon as I saw the dead rabbit, I relaxed, which that is a sentence no one has ever said until just now. I remembered John Lithgow, like I said, but that was it. I actually thought the son in this might be played by the same kid from Honey, I Shrunk the Kids and Honey, I Fucked Up the Baby or whatever the second one was called. But it's definitely not. It's not the same kid. Mm-mm. On a side note, you can't name your son Ernie and make him wear those glasses. I think that's technically child abuse.
My kid. Oh, my God.
And he's... I was like, I'm not sure if I want to go into this, but Ernie is a disturbing character, kind of. Like, he's... Well, the whole... I know it's supposed to come off as like, you know, like little boys love violence and guts and blood and all this stuff. But like,
sure.
Ernie with the hunting things and then like, shoot it, Dad, it's already dead. Shoot it anyways. And,
Yeah. You're right, man.
It doesn't come off as like a cute, like, oh, boys will be boys. It comes off as like, your son needs a therapist.
No, yeah. You know, I wondered that as well when I watched it, because obviously we live in a very different time now. So I had to wonder, like, was that something? Did everybody hunt that much in the 80s? Like, is that, because it seems like it's presented as real normal.
This is just a rite of passage sort of.
Yeah, and maybe it's just never been like that real normal in my life. Like, but yeah, I really was thinking about that too, because it's really, yeah, that kid is really all about
he can't wait to use that gun. He can't wait to see Dad use the gun.
Seriously. But then the wife and the daughter are still like, oh, you and these huntings.
Yeah.
So it's really confusing for me. I'm not really sure what to think about it on the other side.
The only thing I can think is, and this is something I'll talk more about later, but this movie's kind of weird in the way that there are certain things that are set up that don't really pay off, and then certain things later that feel like they're paying off something that was never set up.
Yeah.
And to me, this is something that is set up that isn't paid off, which is this sort of bloodlust in the youngest son. You think maybe, oh, and then through Harry, he'll learn that, you know, that, oh, that don't hurt these animals and become more of a pacifist or whatever. But that doesn't really, that's not really what happens.
No. He like, plays with his dog, I think. That's it.
I didn't recognize the daughter, Sarah, either. But the mom is Melinda Dillon, who was also the mom in A Christmas Story. And she was in Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Sure.
And she is so good in this, playing another, like, concerned mother, but not in the same way. I mean, obviously there's similarities, but it doesn't feel like she's just doing the same character. And I thought she was really good. there's not a ton of outright jokes for her in the script, but she finds all these moments between the words, like, to be really funny.
She does, yeah.
All right, so they go camping, so George could teach Ernie how to hunt, and now they're on their way home. And it's just this opening credits, you know, with so many nature cameos, like a fox and some sort of mountain lion and a squirrel or two. Just so much nature happening.
So much nature.
And this starts bringing back a lot of camping memories for me. Did you go camping when you were a kid?
We went once to a place off a river in Missouri. And it didn't really go well. I mean, I had a great time. I was a kid. I had, like, no responsibilities, so anything that happened, I was like, wow, you guys should fix that. But they did, so it was fine. I had a great time, but my parents weren't, like, eager to do it a lot after that. So
my dad and my stepmom were really into all that stuff, hiking, camping, rock climbing, all of it. So they took my sister and I quite a few times, like, when they lived in California. And it was hardcore camping, like, where you spend all day hiking to look for a campsite and you're completely cut off for 4 or 5 days. And it's weird because at the time I really hated it, but now I look back on it and wish that I hadn't been such a little shit about it, because I don't know. I'd love to do it now, but every time we went, there was always, like, something terrible happened. Like, one time I got altitude sickness and scared the shit out of my dad, and we had to leave immediately. Oh. And another time I threw a tantrum about, like, wanting to go home, and my dad just told me to go walk it off because I was bringing everybody else down. And so I was off wandering around the woods and came up on this guy taking a shit. And, like, from the angle, you don't want to walk up on someone taking a shit. And then he looked over his shoulder. And we made eye contact, and I was just like, fucking camping. I'm done. I'm out. Who does this?
Oh, that's amazing. Oh. People do it. I don't know.
But anyways, the Hendersons, they're driving through the mountains. They're on their way home. And then, oh my God, they hit something. Ernie realizes it's Bigfoot, like, almost straight away. George decides this is a major discovery and they have to take it home. The logic here was a little dubious, but I'm just going to go with it. Like, oh, like, well, we have to take it. Sure. Okay, fine. You have to strap it to your car and go. I get it. There's no movie unless you do. It's a, yeah, it's tied to the top of the car. They start driving again. And I actually jumped when Bigfoot comes back to life and scares, like, when his head comes down out of the windshield. I jumped and was like, damn it, really, Chris? And then, they hit the brakes and he goes flying off into the road ahead of them, and he's lying unconscious again. And George, he gets out of the car, and the wife is like, do you remember what the wife's name is?
Oh, it's,
I don't want to just keep calling her the wife.
Peggy, Samantha, Nancy. It's Nancy.
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 I like how we arrived there. So Nancy's like, well, what are you doing? And he's like, well, we can't just leave it in the road, can we? But yeah, you yes, can.
Exactly what you do with it. You leave it you right should. There. Don't That's, touch it.
Just go around. You tried once. It almost ate your face. Just go. Just leave it for someone else to. But fine. He wants the acclaim and maybe riches of being the guy that finds Bigfoot. So, all right, fine. And then I think this is where, after they drive off, I think this is where we first meet the French hunter guy, Jacques Lafleur.
Oh, Lafleur.
So he's tracking Bigfoot, and he stumbles across, like, their busted license plate and sort of puts together, looking at the scene, what's kind of happened. Here's what bothered me about this part is, all right, so he finds the Bigfoot fur in the mud. He picks it up, smells it, and as the movie continually reminds us, this dude stinks pretty bad. So, okay, fine. You smell the fur. This is Bigfoot odor. He fucking licks it. Why does he lick it? Why? Why does he put it in his mouth, Donna? Because here's the thing. How do you know what Bigfoot tastes like? Is there an X-rated prequel to this movie?
Oh, my God.
I want to talk about Bigfoot's wiener later on, so I don't want to bury the lead on that.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
You'd be disappointed if I didn't want to.
I'll say that. course I would. Of course I would.
That even as a kid, I was like, "Oh no, don't put that in your mouth." Do that.
It's pretty gross. It's a real bad one.
So they get home. They leave Bigfoot in the garage. They think he's perfect. Again. They think he's dead. George wakes up like really early the next morning, suddenly in a panic about the whole thing. He has a kind of a nightmare about hitting him. So he goes to check. He goes to check to make sure Bigfoot's still tied to the car.
I think that's what he's trying to do.
And he sees that he's not there anymore, and he goes back in the house, and this is where this reveal, I still think, is so awesome, where he drops the flashlight, and the flashlight is spinning, and you're just getting, like, the quick glimpses of Bigfoot. I still think that's really, really well done. Well, and the costume, I mean, Harry still looks great. Like, the design of that is brilliant, because it's initially sort of terrifying, and then you keep looking, and you go, oh, I guess he's kind of cute, I don't know. I'm just in awe of how this all comes together. Like, Rick Baker is the guy that built the suit, and the articulation in this thing, especially around the mouth, is unreal. Like, it doesn't even register that you're never thinking about the face being animatronic. It's just Harry. It's just the character. Mm-hmm. And the guy in the suit is Kevin Peter Hall. He played the Predator in the first two Predator movies. Ooh. What a genius. Like, seriously.
Yeah, he's incredible. It looks so, you absolutely believe it. Like, Harry, you believe 100% all the time that's... Like, even as an adult, I have to say, like, it didn't really cross my mind that there was an actor in the suit. I was like,
it's so seamless.
Harry, yeah.
I mean, the reaction shots on him and just, I mean, it's so expressive and so fluid. I mean, there are animatronics in movies that have come out in the last decade or so that don't look as polished or as realistic as this thing. One thing I had never noticed before was that Harry kind of looks like the actor Diedrich Bader. He was Oswald on the Drew Carey Show, the next door neighbor with the mullet in Office Space.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
There were quite a few times it cut to Harry, and I thought, oh, Diedrich, okay, I see it.
All right, yeah, okay. I'll look at him differently from now on.
Harry's trashed the kitchen, knocked over the fridge. Oh. He's looking for stuff to eat. As Donna mentioned earlier, he eats the daughter's corsage. What a fucking idiot this girl is. Like, the rest of the family has enough sense to be like, let's get into the room where Bigfoot is not. And the thing that sucks is, like, stupid enough to go toe-to-toe with Bigfoot is already pretty dumb, but over a corsage, like the most girly, obnoxious, stupid thing to be upset about.
Oh, well, I'm not getting you a corsage for Easter. Damn.
Well, and this is why I could never make a family film, because my instinct was, oh, kill her. She deserves to die. Just in my version, he would just rip her head off.
She's right just here. Gone. Just gone.
Yeah, just, and this is where the daughter exits the film. But this all leads into what was one of my favorite parts as a kid. The whole, like, where the family's outside the house watching Harry inside trash the place. I love this sequence. I still think this is a really funny, really, really good sequence. Like, when he finds the deer mounted on the wall and realizes that it's not alive, where he goes around, he's feeling for the back of it, and it's not there. Mm. And then the look he gives George, like, when he puts it together, like, this, I know what you did.
It's heartbreaking. The animals have feelings, I think, is a main...
Well, that's what the movie taught me, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, and is this the part where he goes out in the backyard and buries? Harry goes out in the backyard and buries it.
I think he does. He buries one of them. I have to say, the house, I have to tell you, is like Hunter porn. Like, there's so, it is like unbelievable how many dead things they squeezed onto that set. And again,
it's true. Well, because Lithgow's running around grabbing, before Harry can bury all this stuff. Yeah. He's running around trying to hide it before Harry can get to it. And yeah, you're right. Every room he walks into, he's just ripping shit off the wall left and right.
So much. It's overwhelming. And again, I have very little frame of reference for this. I feel like confused. I wish, like, did that, was that happening more than it is now? Or is this just like one specific family who's that hunty?
Yeah. Well, and the and that was the funny thing too, is so there's like, he goes through all this trouble to hide all these dead things from Harry. And then Nancy, right?
Nancy. Lovely
if
Nancy.
We're getting that wrong, that's going to be so embarrassing. But
no,
okay, so,
that's right.
Okay, so, but then Nancy, there's something her mother or grandmother gave to her. What was that thing?
Like a stole or something? Like a little mink.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Right. And when he takes that out to bury that, the whole family gives her this judgy look of, how could you keep that? And I'm like, really, George? How many heads did you just throw into the closet? Why are you giving her a dirty look? And this is I think right after this, the daughter says something about it being a male Bigfoot. And the mom says, how do you know it's a male? And then she's like, oh, never mind. Don't answer that.
Oh.
But how indeed? Because Harry's dick and balls become a plot point at several instances in the movie. And it's made to be, I mean, they're prominent enough that the daughter had some interaction with them at some point that we didn't see. There's a whole thing in the climax that revolves around Harry getting kicked in the nuts.
Mm, right.
But we see plenty of full body shots of Harry, and he is sans genitals.
He's built like Barbie.
For obvious reasons. You're not going to put a huge honking dick in a
kids
movie.
Yeah, that's no, I would not have gotten to watch that.
That sounded like, please, more huge dicks in my children's movies. That I'm going to, as an adult, it would have made it wildly enjoyable. Just a huge swinging, like, Bigfoot dick. Because so far, let's see what we're at. With Adventures in Babysitting, I wanted more boobs. With Clue, I demanded more dick jokes. And with Harry and the Hendersons, I need more of Harry's junk.
Full Harry junk. That's what we're asking for here.
If you're going to reference it that many times, just give me like a, show it like in shadow. Give me like a silhouette. Just some indication that it's there. Because as it is, there's all these big reactions to something that is evidently not so big.
Yeah, we can clearly see it's not.
And it
even
must
a thing.
Be huge, Donna. His feet are huge.
I can't even say that. Oh my god. You know, I mean it must be, I guess. I don't know. I would just personally, I was like, you just take out these references. Like there's no.
Yeah, and that, because then you would never have questioned it.
Yeah, I never would have thought about it, but they're talking about it all the time.
Especially like when he gets kicked in the nuts at the end, and it's like, well, where'd he hit him?
I don't see why that would affect him negatively. It seems fine. it's suspect. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's the thing, too. Like, there's all these accounts of Bigfoot in real life, like, you know, people that have seen Bigfoot or claim to have seen Bigfoot and all these things. And then, you know, all these artist mock-ups of all these different things. None of those drawings have wieners either. Not that I'm like specifically looking. This isn't like my eyes go like, oh, no dick. You didn't see him. Don't believe you. Bigfoot would have a dick. This is clearly bullshit. It's just weird that. Maybe, I don't know, it's like retractable, if that's a thing in nature, I'm not sure, I don't know.
The amazing retractable tongue.
Do you believe in Bigfoot?
Oh, wow.
Wow. It seems like a...
We're right there, you asked it, didn't you?
It seems like a relevant question. I didn't know it was going to be such a complicated...
I haven't really thought about that.
Well, if you weigh the different characters and...
you know, I haven't thought about it in probably like 25 years. So,
I would like it to be real, but my gut tells me it's a bunch of bullshit.
I feel like if there was a visual on this, we would cut to a picture of Bigfoot eating, like, cheese curls on your couch right now while you're recording this.
I would flip the fuck out, and I'd be like, let me see your dick. And I'd be like, and then I'd take a picture, and that would be my proof. I'd be like, I told you. But as it stands, I think Bigfoot exists about as much as Harry's wiener does in this movie. After the whole ripping dead animals off the walls and all that stuff, George calls the police to tell them that there's a Bigfoot in his house.
Of course.
I have quite a few problems with this phone call. I don't know how you feel about how this went down, but okay, obviously the people on the other at the police station think it's a prank phone call.
Yes.
That,
yes.
Oh, sure, Bigfoot. Mm. But when this guy goes on and is ranting, and I mean, why not just send someone over just to be sure? But okay, fine. That is not really like a plot hole or anything. That's just sort of, well, the movie doesn't go that way. But then when they, for George, now the police think they're being fucked with. George does not seem to realize that the police are fucking with him right back.
No.
And so the guy is like, oh, well, let me tell you what happens. If you really do have a Bigfoot in your house, then we're going to have to, like, quarantine the area, and it's going to turn into a war zone, and we're going to have to murder your neighbors and blow up your block and shoot your children's pets in front of them. And I mean, he makes it sound like it's going to be – and so, and George is like, well, God, I don't want it. Nope, no Bigfoot here. Sorry, wrong number. Mm-hmm. I mean, no.
No.
No. That's – and then it's just we're on our own. Really?
We're just gonna,
it's like, well, I tried. What are you gonna do?
Very quick transition. I noticed that too. And I had a lot of questions, like philosophical questions at this point. And I guess this goes back to my whether Bigfoot exists or not in my mind. Because how would you do that? Like, what if you actually did see Bigfoot? There is no way to call it in because that's like a number one. That's like, is your refrigerator running? And hey, guess what? Bigfoot's over there. Like, well, that was the biggest prank in the world. But what if it, like, legitimately happened to you, just like George Henderson? What would you do? There is no way to communicate that, like, legitimately there's a giant hairy manimal.
There is an easy way. You say, there is a wild animal in my house. That's it. You don't have to say it looks like Bigfoot. It's walking on 2 feet. It has a huge dick. Just say, there's a wild animal in my house. My family's in danger. Or if you don't even want to go the wild animal route where they're like, ah, we'll just send over animal control. Like, well, that's not good enough. You say, there is an intruder in my home. Yeah. He's going to rip my daughter's head off.
But, Chris, they already knew that he was friendly. And that what if they said it was a wild animal, they might just shoot him.
Okay, so
they
just say there's...
They tell you we're going to kill all of his neighbors already, just if there was a Bigfoot.
But I don't think when he calls the police, this is the part where they realized he's friendly yet. That doesn't happen until he's up in the attic and George climbs up there with his rifle and has the scope pointed at him and sees Harry smile at him through the scope that he realizes, like, yeah. Oh, man, I can't just execute this thing.
Yeah, but they already wanted to keep him alive. I mean, granted, just for profit, but yes. I don't think he wants him dead. I don't know. Maybe I'm being too forgiving of the Hendersons, but
well, either way,
the phone call,
it's bonkers,
crazy.
And then this another scene that annoys the shit out of me is so then Irene, their neighbor, shows up with their dog. She's been watching their dog while they've been out camping. Mm-hmm. George, we see the clock when George wakes up. It's 5:30 in the morning. Mm. So by this point, what is it, 6 a.m.? Who is this bitch? What is she doing there? Fuck right off. It's way too early for this. And then, but this is what really bothers me about Irene. All right, so she, you know, she gets them to open the back door, like right where the kitchen is. And they're trying to hide all the devastation in there, but they can't hide the odor. And so fucking Irene starts going like, oh, what's that smell? Oh, it's terrible. Oh, what is it? If it's so bad, stop inhaling, you maniac. I hate Irene. That's another person who should be decapitated. Oh, my version of this movie, I really pared down the cast very quickly.
Oh, my God.
Oh, so the dog is back and is attacks Harry at one point. Harry's reaction shot when the dog is jumping up towards him is priceless. It's so fun. I laughed out loud at that. That was an awesome moment. But I thought the movie goes on to, it really hammers this point home later, but already we've seen traces of this, that Harry is sort of a pacifist. He's not a violent thing.
He's a vegetarian too. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So am I wrong, or is he about to like rip this dog up? Or is he just stopping it from biting him?
I think maybe I want to go with self-defense on this one. I think he's...
It looked like he was about to rip this dog's head off, and then the family had to be like, no, no, that's our pet.
Please don't kill our dog.
It's a strange message of, I'm so gentle, I'm so lovable, fuck this thing.
Yeah, it really turns on a dime there. He's, a little volatile.
The way he's just holding the mouth shut, though, I was like, okay, maybe, how did I think of this as a kid? As a kid, was I worried the dog was going to bite it, or did I understand that he was just protecting himself? I think maybe now I was all worked up from wanting the daughter to get decapitated, that I was like, look, someone in this movie is getting their head ripped off. Okay, so where do we leave off? LeFleur meets up with this old associate, Wrightwood, who now runs a Bigfoot museum. Wrightwood, I guess they used to be partners at some point. Wrightwood is now more of a skeptic. Thought it was all a total waste of time. LeFleur is still fighting the good fight, still out there. So now we realize he's tracking the Hendersons. He's got their license plate. He's going to go find them. He says he's closer than he's ever been before to finding Sasquatch.
Sasquatch.
And then we see George using sugar cubes to teach Harry tricks, like teaching him how to sit down and stuff. And I remembered that I had never had a sugar cube or was aware of sugar cubes before I saw this movie. And afterwards, I really, really wanted one. And I was sleeping over at my friend's house, and I raided his pantry, and they had sugar cubes, and so I was just popping one after the other. And my mom would have been so angry. My dentist fucking loved it. And so I got really, really sick, and we were playing in his basement, and this kid had a huge basement with tons of toys in different sections for different kinds of toys.
Aww.
And so he was like, yeah, fuck this kid. So he was off in another corner with like one of our other friends, and I knew I was about to puke. And for some reason, instead of just running up to the bathroom, I grabbed, he had this toy of the turtle van, like from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yeah.
And it had this side hatch thing on it. And I just opened that and ralphed into it and put it back on the shelf.
No.
I don't know why I did that. He never said anything about it either. I thought for sure, like, him or his older brother would open it up and it'd be like, bam, that's the secret of the ooze, motherfucker. Never said a word.
Oh, my God.
Never was like, I don't know.
Hey, did you puke in that?
I mean, before you go thinking I'm like a really terrible person, this is the same kid who would later pee on me and blame it on his hamster, so I think we're even. They have to take Harry home. I think they decide that the family's immediate, like almost everybody, I think, except Sarah, the daughter, they love Harry almost right away. They realize, oh, he's not scary. He's lovable. He's great. He's one of us. But they still reach a point where they're like, the house can't take much more of this, and he's not safe here, and he should be back in the wild where we found him. So they decide that that's what they're going to do, and they're trying to get Harry back in the car, like baiting him with hamburgers and stuff so they can drive him back out to where they picked him up. But this is where he gets his name officially. I know we've been calling him Harry this whole time, but this is the first scene where, like, George just says, go say goodbye to Harry. And the kid, who is, like, traumatized by this, he doesn't want to lose his friend, is like, well, since when does he have a name? And George is like, since right now. Oh, okay. So, you know your kid's having an incredibly difficult time saying goodbye to this thing. And now you're going to rub salt in the wound by giving it a name and making it even more personal.
Mm-hmm.
You're a terrible father, George Henderson. Your child has already shown how bloodthirsty he is. So when he grows up and starts wearing people's skin, remember this moment. Harry sees how sad he is, that the kid is crying and all this other stuff. And Harry just runs away. He doesn't even give him a chance to take him home. He runs away. But the problem is he's not in the wild. He's in the suburbs. And I had forgotten that such a huge, we just talked about this, but I remembered all the craziness in the kitchen and Harry's too big to fit through this doorway and blah, blah, blah. I had totally forgotten that such a huge chunk of the movie is them searching for Harry.
Well, me too. I mean, it was such a, it's not even a blip in my memory. Everything is at home.
Right.
So
LaFleur, he goes to the DMV because he has their license plate.
Mm.
This scene is as bad as the fucking phone call with the police. Because he goes, and there's two really crazy things about this scene. The first crazy thing is that how LaFleur gets the address of the Hendersons is he comes up with this cockamamie story about cockamamie. What the hell was that? He comes up with this story about how what him and George used to be buddies, and he saw him, but all he got was his license plate number. And could you please look him up so I can go pay my friend a visit? And the woman's just like, "Yep, I can do that. Here it is," and she writes it down. Okay, that's crazy thing number one. Crazy thing number two about this is that we are not there as LaFleur is coming up with this excuse. We are there after he's already told her this. She's already going along with it, and he's just recounting what's happened for our benefit, for the audience's benefit, where he's like, "How nice of you that I come in and I say I see my old buddy and I only get his address. And so I ask you, can you give me his address? And you say, yes, I will look it up and give you his address. And how fortunate for me. Like, what the hell are you doing? She's already, whatever. That's a stupid. Small potatoes in the scheme of things, I realize. Just kind of a weird moment.
I mean, I'm glad you said it, because I was watching it. I was like, is this,
this is something wrong time. With
me? Am I in a bad mood? Or like, what? Because, that bothered me too. That's a little...
I don't even think you can just say, like, it was a more innocent time. I think even in 1987, this was a little like, get the fuck out of here, sir. Especially at the DMV. When do they ever bend over backwards for anybody?
Yep, here you go, right away. No problem.
I was thinking, I was worried, Donna, because at this point in the movie, we're like an hour in, and I thought I might not have anything to say about the fashion in this one.
Oh, fashion!
I was thinking nothing's really jumped out at me. But wait.
Oh.
What's this? I think... Yep. It's time for Chris's Fashion Corner. Christmas fashion. What are you wearing tonight? So the first offender isn't really that bad. George goes to visit Wrightwood looking for more info on Bigfoot, and he's wearing a plaid shirt with a tie and a corduroy blazer over it.
You like that?
Oozing sex. because God bless the 80s. But then later on, we see Irene on her stationary bike doing her workout, wearing tights and some sort of zebra print top or some such bullshit. Irene is a fucking travesty. She always looks like she just got hit by a bus and then leaped up into the scene. Everything, her hair, her outfits, her earrings, and then basically everything Sarah wears, because it's not just the offensive fashion of an 80s teenager, it's a middle-aged costume designer's version of what an 80s teenager would wear, and it's all pretty hideous, but the biggest offender, I don't know if you noticed this, is the dress that she's wearing for dinner when Wrightwood comes over. It's a church dress with a shit-sucking doily sitting on top of it. Like, someone just cut a hole in a doily for her to stick her head through. And it just lays there on her shoulders. Like, oh, Mom, my dress looks so plain. Oh, here's an old dinner napkin. Just stick your fucking head through it.
I had a dress like that. It was awesome. I looked great.
I urge
it.
Just go back and watch a couple seconds of that one scene and see, like, whoa. This is not a mine. This is a me. Whatever. That's it. That's all I've got for the fashion corner this week.
Oh, wait. I have a fashion. I noticed one fashion, please. And I was so excited to tell you about it. that Sarah wears this skirt that is a jean skirt. The top, very top part looks like the top of like a jean skirt, sort of tight. Mm-hmm. And then there is a different type of material sewn in to make sort of like a fluffy A-line type deal with a different, do you know what I'm talking about at all?
Do you remember what scene she was wearing this in?
No. Sorry.
Oh, how did I miss this?
I know. It was just real quick, and I had forgotten all about those skirts existing. I never had one.
I was going to say, shit, please tell me this is a build-up, too.
Always wanted one.
Okay.
And so as an amendment to my life and unfulfilled dreams, I am going to run right out and either purchase or make one for myself as an adult. So next time you see me, I will hopefully be wearing a half jean skirt, half skirt skirt. I'm going to try to make it the loudest material I can.
Here is my version of that. Mm-hmm. I had a real love affair with hammer pants.
Yes.
I wanted some so bad. And the closest, my mom, bless her, she tried so hard. She came back with like these pajama pants that were like kind of purple and had this crazy pattern on them. But they weren't really, they weren't hammer pants. It wasn't the right material. They didn't have the right shape to them. It was just a goofy looking pair of sweatpants. And I used to wear them. I used to play soccer when I was a little kid. Oh. And you have to wear shorts no matter what the weather is. So when it's cold out, you just wear sweatpants and then your soccer shorts over the sweatpants. It's a real hot look.
Yeah.
And I didn't have regular sweatpants. I just had these crazy wild purple quasi hammer pants. And oh man, did I get teased so bad. I wish I have pictures of this somewhere, and if I find them, I'll try and post them. But I, not only was I rocking the knockoff hammer pants, I had kind of a mullet sort of thing going on, and I also had lightning bolts shaved into the side of my head.
Yes.
Like, that was a thing. We did that. We did shit like that.
Oh, the cool ones did.
Oh, so Harry, now that we're getting into, like, Harry wandering through the suburbs and separated from the family, here's my erotic hot tub scene.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Imagine my surprise when this started, because apparently I was into old portly women when I was a kid. Lady is a thick bowl of chili in a tight black bathing suit.
Oh, that's amazing.
My jaw dropped for real. Like, I was like, oh no. This is the, maybe there's another hot tub scene later. No, this is it.
Oh man.
I guess it really did not take much when I was a kid.
I mean, two elderly people, there were two people, Chris, not just one. There was a gentleman with the lady as well.
Oh, what a heartbreaker he was.
But they were really enjoying themselves in that hot tub, and they're showing it because I think Harry thinks that these people are, like, cooking themselves.
I was going to ask you, this is, even as a child, there is some weird cross-cutting going on in the scene, and I guess I'm just not totally sure what they're getting at, because he's in a kitchen, he's looking through someone's kitchen window at this woman lowering a chicken into a pot of boiling water, and then he looks over and sees this old man lowering this hot mama into a hot tub. And he keeps looking back and forth, getting more and more like, and I'm like, why? Is he hungry? Is he gonna bust a nut? I don't understand what's happening. I'm not quite sure why.
Several instances in this movie, I really feel like, yes, there's just a huge lack of clarity, because it could really go either way. He's vegetarian except for old lady humans? Soup is what I was thinking, like, At first, yeah. I thought he was going to go and get a big spoon and just start eating the old people's soup.
I like our version a lot better. There's heads getting ripped off. There's a big swinging Bigfoot dick. This old lady's getting eaten out of a hot tub.
Oh, that sounded different.
Oops. That was in my wildest dreams. Oh, oh so embarrassing. God. Whatever. Hilarious. So that was my erotic hot tub scene. Way to go, young Chris. And I think this is the part, next we get into this whole situation where George works at his father's store, which is some sort of outdoorsy, like guns and ammo and all kinds of supplies, like sort of store. And that's the worst description of an establishment.
Pretty much what
you know,
it is.
One of those. His dad's his boss, and now with all this hoopla of all these Bigfoot sightings that are popping up all over the neighborhood, his dad has this brilliant idea of like, hey, why don't you draw a picture of Bigfoot, make him all scary and gnarly looking, and it'll get people whipped up into a frenzy, and this will be a real boon to our business. We'll have guys coming in here, and we'll put up a map of where all the sightings have been, and we'll just, we'll be selling so many guns and so much ammo, and George obviously hates this idea because he knows Harry's out there running around, but the dad is like, well, what do you care? We both know they're not going to find anything. Like, there's nothing out there to shoot at. This is another scene that I wish had more set up for two reasons. So the majority of this I'm going to get into when we get to our final thoughts on the film, and the other part of it I'm going to get into, well, I mean, I guess we can get into it right now, because what happens from here, the next major sequence in the movie is this scene where Harry is running around at night, George is running around looking for him, and so are a ton of police. It looks like a SWAT team. And all of these amateur hunters who are running around trying to find Bigfoot. This is a really cool idea. And LaFleur is in there too.
Yeah.
They're all running around. This is such a great, like, chaotic, cool idea for a set piece that they could have done so much more with than they do. There's so little of the, you get like one or two instances of the cops going after these amateur hunters about like, come on, buddy, you got no business being out here. And some guy being like, oh, you know, you have any idea how much I paid for that gun? And like, just
amazing.
The ensuing like calamity that you would expect from this volatile a situation. It doesn't really, it's just a lot of guys running around in the dark. It's not much else.
Yeah.
Well, LaFleur, here's one thing I do appreciate, is that this is another movie where you've got a bad guy who is absolutely 100% not fucking around. Like, he is going to murder Harry. And there is a scene where they are trapped in, you know, the bin of, like, a garbage truck together.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And Harry picks up a revolver, curiously, not understanding what it is, and holds it up to his eyeball. And LaFleur reaches forward and grabs the trigger, like, and it's the pacing of it is like, it's pretty slow and it's kind of suspenseful, and you're thinking like, holy shit, dude. Like, as a kid, this would have been kind of traumatizing. Like, this guy means business. And after this sequence, he becomes a little bit too cartoonish of a villain. For me as a, you know, a 30-year-old watching this. But up until this point, I mean, this dude has meant business. It's a legitimate threat, and we've talked about this before, and I don't think there's enough of this in kids' movies now. It's always like the bumbling doofus bad guys, or there's never really anything to be that afraid of. And in these sort of movies, it was like, no, this dude, he's a legitimate threat. Well, George escapes with Harry. They get away from LaFleur, the cops, and whatever. LaFleur gets arrested. So when he's in jail, and because they found him in garbage, he stinks. And there's that cool scene in the jail cell where he's pacing around and everyone else in the cell is running to the other side of the cell where he is. Yeah. And if you notice, all the guys locked up with him are those wannabe hunters.
Oh, I did not notice.
Yeah. Right, because you don't see a lot of them being rounded up. It's just sort of like, oh, the hunters are in this part of the neighborhood. The police are in this part of the neighborhood. Like, nobody's really running it. It doesn't turn into a great big ordeal. And I thought it was building to something a lot cooler.
Yeah.
The next morning, like, LeFleur gets bailed out of jail by, with the help of one of his buddies or whatever. Harry has come home and had his big reunion with everybody. And then they have, well, oh no, it's not the next morning. There's the dinner with Wrightwood, where mm-hmm. Wrightwood comes over and realizes that Bigfoot is real, and he meets Harry and has an such a great reaction to seeing Harry for the first time. Mm. But then he's the one that says, like, well, you're right, he's not safe here. I think I know of a safe place where we can take him. Mm. Okay, great, we'll leave first thing in the morning because we're not going to be able to find it at night.
Yeah.
And so they escape, and LeFleur is hot on their tail. Even though they pop his tires, he steals their station wagon, and they're all in Wrightwood's truck or whatever. They get to to me, it looks like they just drive right back to where they found Harry from in the first place, or thereabouts. And LeFleur is like right on their tail, but far enough behind that they have some time to get Harry, like, to try and convince him to get out of there. That goodbye is, for me, even as an adult, it's hard to watch, where he's like he's got to yell at him and convince him that, like, oh, we don't want you anymore. You got to go.
Oh,
and he punches him.
Terrible. Just terrible.
Even now, I'm like, oh, no.
Stop
George,
it.
He doesn't understand.
No. It's so sad.
And then you get the big goofy climax with everybody stomping around making fake Bigfoot tracks so LeFleur can't track Bigfoot. And then, like we said before, Harry gets kicked in the nuts, and that's a whole big thing. And then eventually, LeFleur is also won over by Harry's charm. He sees that he's a gentle creature, and he comes around awfully quick.
Gives him a very big hug. He can't resist the Bigfoot hug.
And then so presumably that's it. And then, so LeFleur is no longer going to hunt Bigfoot. And Harry walks off into the woods, and all of a sudden there's like six other Bigfoot there.
Mm, yeah, wow. It turns out. Chris,
thanks for helping out a second ago, bitch, when we were like getting fucking attacked by this guy.
Right, yeah, they just kind of waited. They're like, we'll work this out.
Let's see how this plays out.
I'm not sure.
We don't know the whole story. This guy might be a real dick. All right, so that's basically the gist of Harry and the Hendersons. I have to say, first and foremost, I am relieved to report that I do still really enjoy the movie. I think a lot of it still works. It's still very funny. John Lithgow, even when he's not playing an outright comedic character, still finds ways to be hysterical. There are a few moments of physical humor where he's just so damn good. The exercising bit when Harry's head is popping up on the floor and so Irene doesn't realize what's going on. He pretends he's doing an exercising routine. That I still think is really, really funny. Harry is also really funny. His expressions, reaction shots, just so, so good. And I can't believe I'm going to say this, but it's still really touching too. Like, even with the overly sentimental score and the transparency with which they're pulling on your heartstrings, it works. I mean, they get you. You really do feel for Harry and for the family. It's still a really cute movie. It doesn't seem nearly as cheesy or as forced as a lot of other family films do. I don't know. Well, what about it still worked for you?
I think a lot of it, like you said, I really did enjoy rewatching it. I thought there's still a lot that's a really good quality family entertainment. I did. I enjoyed a lot of those, like a lot of the fun devices we've been talking about. It's just, some of it's really clever and lighthearted, which I think is really charming, of course, still. And I don't know that I would watch it as much as I did then. That was a lot. I watched it quite a bit.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Twice is enough now. But I think it's still a good, if you're 7 and having a slumber party, I think you should rent this movie. I'll tell you that.
Oh, kids would still love the shit out of this.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think that's one. You could still play for them and they'd be like, yep. Great.
Well, that's what still works for us. But Donna has some gripes.
First of all, let me just say that that daughter is the whiniest, most cliched, angsty girl. Oh my god. She's the opposite of Sarah in Adventures in Babysitting.
Adventures in Babysitting, yeah.
She's so horrible, and like everything out of her mouth is just to prove that she's horrible, pretty much, is what it seems like.
Yeah.
Which is...
like, it's pretty one note. She doesn't really come around on Harry until, you know, right before they take him to wherever the hell, at the end of the movie, pretty much.
Yeah, it just is, it seems like sort of a waste of a character, and just sort of, everything's just a throwaway, and chalk it up to being a teenager, and a lot of teenagers are like that, you know, I was a teenager, and there's, you know, I had some pretty bad days, and that's fine, but damn, what a waste of a character, that girl. I couldn't stand it. It was
She's sort of the four family members, and they're all of them, it's all, they're all basically archetypes of...
Sure, sure.
But she is definitely, of the four, the least developed of all of them. And I think it just... This was a time in filmmaking where it just... It's like, if you had a teenager in your movie, it was a brat. Especially if the movie was more centered on the parents. Like, if you think about the National Lampoon's Vacation movies...
Sure, sure.
Your kids were just going to be, like, smart-alecky and, like, and talk back to you and just sort of, like, put out by everything going on. Yeah, Charming. I could have done without her.
Yeah. It just seems such a shame that that was such a thing. Anyway.
Well, how would you... like it. What could they have done differently with the character, though? Like, what would have made it more... satisfying for you, because they've already got the little kid is the one who buddies up with of the two children, like it's Ernie is the one that really gets close to to Harry, and that's sort of the problem with the movie is that there really isn't anything for the daughter to do. I'm not really sure what other sort of like facet of, you know, as far as Harry and his dynamic with that family, I'm not really sure what else they could have done with her, because I'm not sure it's really that her being so resistant to him is what I have a problem with. I think that's that could have been a fun thing to play with, but it's basically, I think what you were saying too is that it's just awfully repetitive, that every time she says something it's like, yeah, we get it, there's nothing there's nothing new happening here, and then all of a sudden it's just a lot of her like, oh, he stinks, oh, he's the worst, he ruins everything, and then all of a sudden he hands her some flowers to make up for the corsage, and then she smiles, and, oh, I guess you're not so bad, Harry.
She doesn't need a specific love interest, or she doesn't need... But she has to like something. Like,
yeah, yeah.
Something. Anything. Anything. You could have chosen anything, and it wouldn't have had to be a main thing. I just want to see that this girl sometimes is happy. And if it's that, like, oh, she's sometimes happy, and then Harry makes her really unhappy. Okay, well, that's more interesting to me than just, like, this girl hates everything, also him.
Or what? If there's
so
something...
So why do I care?
Something specific that she can't... that she wants but can't have because of Harry's presence. Like,
yeah.
Even if it's something as cliche as, like, oh, she finally got a date with so-and-so.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
No, none of us are leaving the house until we figure out what to do with Harry.
So, yeah, so you can't go
And
see.
Then there's, like, a reason to... Not only are you big and smelly, but, damn, you're really fucking everything up
for me. Ruining my social life for you.
Which would have been kind of a nice counterpoint for Ernie instantly accepting... accepting
absolutely,
Harry.
Absolutely.
So but anyways.
Yeah.
So that's Sarah.
She can just keep herself.
Just eat a dick, Sarah. Let me see. Well, the only complaints I had about the movie was, so the subplot with George and his father, all of a sudden, well, I don't think it's terrible. I just don't like the way they handle it, because what happens is, George's father wants him to make this picture to put in the store window, make Bigfoot all scary looking or whatever. And what we're made to understand is that George apparently is an artist. This has never been mentioned before. Mm-hmm. It comes up out of the blue. And his dad was not very supportive of all this. He thinks it's really silly. Like, he even says something like, oh, you still mess around with those paints or whatever. And and then when he's actually doing the drawing or trying to please his father by doing this drawing, and Nancy comes in and he says, like, you know, the only time he's ever been supportive of this and he wants me to draw, you know, like, he's basically asking me to draw a mugshot of my best friend. Mm. And I don't mind this subplot at all. What I mind is it becomes an issue exactly when the story needs it to. If they'd set up that store and that relationship early on, mm-hmm. and there was time to do it, because you do see George interacting with his coworkers before you ever even are aware that his dad's going to be in the film.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
There was enough screen time to hint at this beforehand. I think that would have been more satisfying, and that leads into a larger overall problem with the movie for me. The only thing I think that keeps it from being, like, really a great film, and obviously this is just my own dumb opinion, is that it would have been nice if the family had learned more about themselves, or if they had changed in a more substantial way because of Harry.
Yeah.
I mean, there's definitely, you know, George rethinks hunting and all of that, and certainly we see the family's attitude towards Harry change, but with the exception of Sarah, that all happens not even 30 minutes in. I mean, they're pretty on board with him right off the bat.
Yeah.
And I think that's fine, but then I think if their attitudes towards each other had changed because of Harry, that yes. would have been a better story, maybe. I don't know.
Yes.
Maybe I'm misreading it, but so that was a problem for you also?
I think you're absolutely right. It was, that's the same thing with Sarah not having enough love. Like, they're just not, it's almost there, but it just doesn't really take that final step where everyone actually learns to live a better life or actually be a better person, because hunting or not hunting to me is not a big enough issue. Like, that doesn't really, whether you hunt or you don't, it really doesn't affect how you treat your family per se, or it doesn't affect right. how the relationships that you have. It's just, it's a hobby, it's something you do. So, yeah, maybe, you know, you could have realized that, oh, you only use hunting as the only way you can talk to your dad, but you don't want to hunt, and so you have to find another way. Or maybe you realize that you're not spending enough time talking or listening to your wife or whatever, or spending time, like, letting your kid become an artist himself. Any of those things.
Yeah.
You could have learned, but you just didn't. You're just like, oh, now he's gone, back to normal.
Right. So I think if you set up a different dynamic in Act 1, including George's relationship with his father,
yeah.
and then by the end of Act 2, it's become a completely different dynamic, like, because of Harry, you know, George learns to stand up to his dad, or because of Harry, the family becomes closer, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong, I still like it a lot. The movie works as is. It's just that theme, because even the tagline is like, oh, when you can't believe your eyes, fucking eat a dick. No, it's when you can't, if you don't see, damn it. I can't believe this.
This
if you
every
see
time.
Bigfoot and he doesn't have a penis, eat a corsage. Hold on, I gotta look this up. When you don't, if you don't believe your eyes, trust your heart, do something with your goddamn heart.
Yeah.
That's the tag. Harry and the Hendersons, do something with your goddamn
heart. Do something with your stupid heart.
And so that obviously is like a major theme of the film, and it just feels undercooked. It just feels kind of vague. Like,
it does.
They just all seem like such great people and everything seems pretty good
mm-hmm.
before they meet Harry.
Yeah.
And it's not that, like, Harry needed to find this family so that they could, you know, learn to be better people or whatever. It's more just like, wow, he's really lucky he wound up with such a cool family.
Yeah.
Well, I have some fun trivia.
Oh! Fun trivia. I'm excited. I'm ready.
Donna.
Hit me.
Got some fun trivia. Actually, there wasn't a whole lot of trivia for this movie, but a couple of interesting things. Mm. I think this has been a trend so far with all the movies we've watched, but this did not do that well critically or commercially, but has since become a cult favorite. I mean, it wasn't a bomb. It did okay at the box office. It just didn't, like, you know, light it on fire. I think it opened against Beverly Hills Cop 2 and The Untouchables.
Oh, dang. Tough weekend.
Yeah. I was surprised when I looked it up on Rotten Tomatoes, though, and I saw that it was only at 44%. Mm. That seems... I don't know. One critic said something about it being, like, Spielberg sentimentality at its worst, and another... There was, like... Another said it was vegan propaganda or something. And one guy said they should have showed more of Harry's dick.
that one was there were, yours. You wrote that.
There were also... I just wrote it with Sharpie on my screen. Yeah. I agree with this guy. He's making a lot of sense. There were also a lot of complaints about it being a knockoff of E.T. And okay, so there's definitely some crossover there. A lot of similar elements and themes. And again, it was produced by Spielberg's company. But I think it's important to point out that the two movies, they seem to have very different aspirations. Like, this is definitely not as sophisticated or as subtle as E.T. But I think that's okay because this is a more overt comedy. Mm-hmm. And it's sillier and more ham-fisted. And I think there's a place for that, too. And the criticism feels a little unfair because I just didn't get the sense that that was the level that they were even trying to achieve with this. I don't know. The show was turned into a TV series in 1991.
Yes.
It ran for 3 seasons.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say 3 episodes. Yes, I think I watched it like maybe about 3 times, I guess. I don't know. Tell me more. What happened to the TV show?
So from what I understand, rather than picking up after the film, it retells the events. And the whole premise is that the Hendersons, they're hiding Harry from their neighbors and other people. And, oh, gadzooks, hijinks. And maybe I'm remembering the song, but I think in the 3rd season, the rest of the world finally finds out about Harry and he becomes like a celebrity.
Oh.
I don't know if I dreamed that.
Wow, weird.
I've seen the last episode of, or at least the last scene of the show, and it ends the same way the movie does with them realizing that Harry is going to be safer and happier out in the wild. So you did see it. You've seen episodes of it before.
Yeah, I remember watching it, be really, really jazzed about it, and then being like, let's see if Garfield's on.
Yeah, I watched about 5 minutes of it on YouTube today.
Oh.
And I was aware that this was a show and it was on, but I did not watch it. So I've only seen, like, flipping through channels, maybe caught a couple of minutes of it here and there. It's something. It just feels like a TGIF sitcom with Bigfoot in it. It's got that sort of aesthetic and that sort of tone. And like in the part I saw today was all about like, oh, George, you got me a jewelry cleaner as an anniversary present. Wah, wah, wah. Like, it was just, I thought like maybe I was too old to be interested in the show, but I wasn't. In 1991, I was like in 3rd grade. Like Saved by the Bell was probably my favorite show.
Oh my
that
God.
Was my high bar for a quality sitcom, and I still didn't watch this. So,
yeah, that's pretty rough. That is pretty rough.
Overall, though, I would say that I think this is still worth rewatching. I still had a good time with it. There are some plot points in it that make you scratch your head or just flat out like, what the hell? It gets a little bananas in certain parts, but I still liked it. I thought it was still really entertaining.
Yeah. I agree with you. It was a little silly, a little wonky at points, but overall I would say absolutely still still holds up, still a good one.
Yeah, if you have memories of watching this as a little kid, this is not one that I think you're going to go back and wish that you hadn't taken another look at. I think it's still, I don't know if holds up is the right term. But, I mean, it's goofy and charming enough that it's, even if you don't get the same things you get out of it as a kid, there's still, like, there's still a lot to enjoy.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, guys, that's it. Thanks for listening. Let us know if you have any suggestions for other movies we should revisit, and we'll see you next time.